Just in and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Fuck, Jake, I'm gonna open this one.
Let's see. How do we?
You start it.
Okay.
Okay. Hi. Yeah. No. Wait. I'm a horny boy wizard that found a robot girl. She's a computer. Holden McNeely. Jake, you say something now. I'm awkward.
And I'm a robot girl or Persicom. In this world, all personal computers have been replaced with sexy android women, and that's not the important part. We don't even go over why that's a thing. Also, I'm my own sister. I'm in love with my dad, and that's like. Not even what this series is about. Bruiser.
And today we have a guest.
I'm an accommodating landlady who just loves taking care of men who don't know how to do shit for some reason.
Opening a podcast, and this is our episode on Clamp.
Right off the top, Katie Rose Leon of Ballin' Out Super, of are you part of Al Bummer, or do you just do like guest spots? Like
I was part of the original Al Bummer crew, and then I had to quit because I got a real job. I had a financial situation. Unfortunately, that show's been canceled.
Yeah, that show's
nothing
done.
But
yeah,
love
yeah.
to Giant Bomb and all their endeavors.
Hell yeah, dude.
And I desperately wanted someone on the show that I knew had some 90s, 2000s bona fides. You were incalculably necessary for our Digimon episode. Because Clamp, they're the Golden Girls. They are Tokyo. If you were sitting in the manga section on the carpeted floor at Barnes & Noble in the years 1999 to 2004, you had some Clamps ready to go.
I was really excited when you asked me to do this, because at first I couldn't tell if you were asking for me to suggest someone. I'm like, I hope it's me.
We need someone to do Clamp, and then we hope that you could tell us who could do that episode. Yeah. No, of course we wanted you, and you know, I think the deal with Clamp is you either have no idea what the fuck we're talking about right now, or you're so goddamn hype right now you're about to bust out of your own jeans.
I think that's extremely accurate.
It is like, by the way, shout out to our producer, April. She is so excited we're doing this right now, to the point where I have to say, April, hit it!
No!
Here we go. Just got it in there real early.
Not our recurring joke where you play that horrible audio. I hate.
Sorry, that's an inside joke. Whenever I scream April Hit It, she plays the Donkey Kong rap from Donkey Kong 64. It's a thing. Oh. People love it. They literally DM me all the time and say, never stop doing it.
He's the leader of the DK.
Yes! Yeah. He's got a coconut gun, dude.
Yeah.
It's a bad rap.
I love the Donkey Kong rap because someone was hired to record the Donkey Kong rap, and I love to envision that conversation.
Shout out to Grant Kirkhope, dude. You rule. He's the one who did the music, did the song, made the thing. He's awesome, dude. But anywho, we're not here to talk about the fucking Donkey Kong rap, goddammit. We're here to talk about, and I'm sorry I cursed, I'm sorry I invoked God into the situation.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about Clamp, which is a really, really cool and interesting group of lady mangaka that have existed since the 80s. They are, in a lot of ways, manga anime of the 90s, but they are still kicking. I mean, they still have an ongoing series today, and their output is pretty prolific, and you know, Same old, same old, in certain ways, they can't stop working and it's killing them, but different in another way where they're all pretty much self-taught and they are just this four-person team. They don't have assistants. They don't have a lot of outside input, and they found this really unique, interesting working relationship that I was fascinated by. I love reading about process. That's like my thing. I love hearing about how, especially group process, as a person who's a member of a pretty sizable sketch comedy group for like over a decade that did pretty well for itself in New York and whatnot, you know, group work dynamics are a fascination for me, and especially when they do, in fact, make the dream work. And they definitely did that, and they have a very interesting story in terms of that.
As a young weeb, I would see Clamp series all the time in like the, you know, on the shelves at Barnes & Noble, like I talked about, on the shelves at Suncoast Video. Their name was bounced around a lot, but I never got into a lot of their series, you know, Magic Knight Ray Earth, Clamp School Detectives, X-1999. Basically, up until we did this episode, the most exposure I ever had was watching the heavily, brutally censored version of Cardcaptor Sakura that aired on Kids WB.
Yeah.
Featuring the iconic-ish theme song by Dave Doerr. April, if you could play Cardcaptor, a mystic adventure. Cardcaptor, yes. A quest for all time.
Cardcaptors was part of that like 90s import where they're like, well, culturally we can't have this here, so let's just make it a different show.
And the people loved it, right?
Yeah.
The people loved it, right?
No, they hated how how censored it was.
Okay.
The weebs would like buy the DVDs, watch the full like subtitled versions and be like, oh, this show is like very, very, very much about like characters loving each other and less about collecting tarot Pokemon.
Yeah. And for me, like when I was a young kid, like late elementary, early middle school, I really wanted to get into comic books, but in that time period, mainstream American comics looked like dog shit to me. They were just so ugly and like unapproachable. And I don't know, I mean, I'm sure you'll talk about this, but I think like Dark Horse got options to Cardcaptors because they did bring the show over here, so they actually released them in single issues that I believe they actually flipped the orientation so they could release them like American comic books. And to me, I was like, oh shit, this looks beautiful. Like, you know, to me the art was so beautiful.
Yes
And it was for girls, which I know sounds corny, but like that there just wasn't a space for that at the time.
Dude, I love how you're talking about how ugly comic books were, because it brings me back to my time with like Spawn and Punisher and Ghost Rider.
Right.
And it was all like, just
the,
like
I can't believe you like that mainstream shit. I was into the real hardcore characters like Blood Dip.
Oh yeah.
And Pain.
Yeah, Gum Lord was awesome.
Gun.
Yeah.
The era of men looking like a cargo vest at all times, just like thousands of pockets. And
thank you, Rob Liefeld. Shout out.
Yes, like, no, yeah. And like, it's ironic because like later in my adult life, I got back into that. I had like a reverse engineering situation. I'm like, but what if they had a gun? But, you know, it's like a 13, 14 year old, I'm like, well, I don't relate to this shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved Sailor Moon, and I'm like, oh, there's like more of this kind of stuff.
This is a whole genre.
Yeah, and that's
like,
how I got into Clamp. And also, yeah, it was full of like girls and then like beautiful, non-threatening men with legs that are most of their torso.
What's funny about that too is, as we'll find out, that's actually them branching out though. I mean, originally they were doing super broody.
Yeah.
I mean, X-1999 is that. You know, they literally had to stop making it because of fucking 9/11, because they were like, oh, we gotta stay away from this.
But non-threatening men with legs for days.
Yep, the noodle fully in effect. Yeah, absolutely.
Is it too gross to say that like one of the things that makes Clamp stand out, especially to a Western audience that has a more limited selection, is the fact that they go across all these different genres? You can do stuff like an isekai, or stuff like a slice of life, or stuff like something like X-99, which is a full-on just violent knuckle like splitting Dragon Ball style destruction fest, but it still has like kind of a female gaze, which gives it a unique perspective.
Yes.
And the fact that they didn't just keep themselves in the boys love shoujo, I please someone find a better word than ghetto, because my elderly ass just wants to call it the show Joe Ghetto.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it works.
It really, like, just kind of gives so much more variety and a unique experience than just boys punch each other in a tournament number 703 that most anime charts are kind of filled with.
Well, that's why it was so effective, I think.
Totally.
And, like, I don't think people give it enough credit, honestly, for that, because I think even when it's not blatantly obvious, it's just so subtle. Because, you know, there's still, we got still got, like, skimpy ladies and stuff like that. Like, there's all the elements of that there, but I think it's just handled differently.
Yeah, and I think that is exactly what helps it be a lot more enjoyable by, like, a wider audience of people. It's, like, inherent in it. And then for me, I kind of had a similar, well, a similar but different experience this week. I had never really, I mean, I'd heard of Cardcaptor before, but I wasn't really aware. There was this big enthusiasm for us to do a Clamp episode, so this was a really a new world for me. I started looking into stuff, and as I was doing research, I was like, I think the one I really want to dig into and check out from what I'm reading is Holic. So it's spelled XXX Holic,
yeah.
And I picked up that and started reading it, and I think I had a similar situation of I opened it up. I was like, oh, this sounds cool, and I totally kind of think I get their deal. And then that art just hit me in the face. Mm. It was so beautiful. And it was so different in terms of at least my own personal manga reading. I'm like a big, you know, Berserk guy. Mm-hmm. And it was just like an elegance to it. And yet it was still gothy and creepy and stuff. But it just...
It almost looks like a mono.
Yeah,
those drawings. Mm. Like, you know, it's very like... They're
live.
Like paintings almost.
And they did that on purpose. They wanted like thicker lines and they wanted to get across this creepier aesthetics. So they wanted things to look almost like an every frame of painting kind of thing. They were going for that, it seems like. And I love that too. I love how every single time they're like, all right, for Cardcaptor, they were like, we need thinner lines. We need, you know, and they have very deep discussions about the pencils they're going to use, the paper they're going to use. For Clover, they switch to a completely different type of paper to get a different effect across in their work. And I love that shit. And they're just so much attention to detail as a group. And that's really cool to just consider that kind of collaborative effort. Because four people, that's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And the way they've divvied up how shit gets done without them, like, you know, ending up like beating the shit out of each other in frustration is really cool to see. And it just seems like they, you know, I think they've gotten looser and looser with it as they've gone on, as they've gotten older and trust each other more and stuff. But they really like hammer out as a group, like a unique vision for each thing that they're doing and delineate roles in a way that gets a very specific thing. And also, though, that they're so, you know, there's one person, one member of the group that comes up with the storylines, with everything. And it's kind of fun, too, because she's like surprising, like the other artists in the group, the three other ladies, talk about how they'll literally be brought to tears when they come in on Monday and read the new script. They don't know what's going to happen. And so if there's a huge character death or something in a script, I mean, they're just as surprised as the reader oftentimes, but then they have to go draw it, you know, which I think is really fascinating. So anyways, shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's get into it. I'm excited. This is going to be a fun one. Clamp, by the way, which if you have no idea the fuck we're talking about, right? You're driving in the road. You're like, God damn.
Are they talking about that one-off character from Futurama?
No.
I bet they're talking about the one-off character from Futurama who goes clamps a lot. I bet that's who they're talking
They're just driving in their car. They're just like, I'm going to jerk this over the bridge. I'm so sick of this GD traffic. I can't even curse correctly. So I'm so mad at my stupid, you know, my dumb kids are flunking out of circus class or whatever it is you're freaking out. I don't even know what grown adults do. I sit in here in my little bubble. But anyways, where were we? Clamp.
Clamp. You were going to talk about what is a clamp anyway?
Clamp is an all-female manga artist group whose members include their fearless leader, Nanase Okawa, the story person, who is the writer in addition to three artists named Makona, Tsubaki, Mick Nakoi, and Satsuki Igarashi. I think I said all of their older names, though. They changed their names. We'll talk about that later. It's a weird thing. They just did it for funsies. They first formed in the mid-80s, and their most iconic works, notable works, include X, 1999, which we mentioned, Magic Knight Rayearth, Cardcaptor Sakura, Chobits, and Holic, again spelled XXX Holic if you want to check that out. Are there other ones before we even move on, Katie, that you think are worth mentioning right up top?
I mean, the ones that I remember are Clover and Angelic Lair.
Yes, Angelic Lair also kind of their first foray into full-on shonen a little bit. Or is that, I'm trying to keep it all together. They've made a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's all very different. Tokyo Babylon 2 is another probably, that's the one that was kind of their breakthrough. So anyways, it's like, it's a ridiculous amount of stuff. And some of it's unfinished, including Clover, which is also an interesting part of the story.
Yeah.
Did that break you, Katie? That
it's kinda. I have a very funny relationship to all these works because of like the time period I associate them with. Uh-huh. So Clover, the reason I started to read Clover.
What's Clover basically about? What's it basically about?
You know, I don't remember a lot of it. It's like
it's like a race of magical kids,
kids, and it's like, you know, it's kind of like Akira, but like well dressed and happy. I don't know. It's like I haven't read it since I was like a teenager.
Yeah.
But the reason I read it is because I went to Big Apple Anime Con, a thing that no longer exists, and it was my first ever anime convention.
Oh my god!
I was like 13.
Did you cosplay?
No, but I was definitely in a outfit. This is like probably 2002 or some shit. So I'm wearing like a plaid skirt, and I had like a goth Hello Kitty patch that I put on it and like made like a fake wallet. There was a look.
Yeah.
And me and my best friend were online. And this guy that
I really like the idea of a fake wallet chain, like you pull the chain and it's just a little note that says, I don't have money.
No, it was like literally like designed to look. I don't know. I was trying something out. Anyway, I'm online with my friend Eric and this guy who was too old to be dressed as Link was trying to what now I'm realizing was flirting with me at the time. I'm like, everyone here's so nice. And he asked me if I was cosplaying and I said no. And, you know, my hair's dyed, but I used to have like natural, like dirty blonde hair that kind of like did an Aeon Flux thing. And he's like, oh, I thought you were dressed as the girl from Clover.
Mm.
And I was like, what's that? So then I had to go read it because I'm like, this is me now. Didn't leave as much of an impression as the other work, but like, unfortunately, that's always what I think of now is like an inappropriate man dressed as Link.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Was that your first experience with Clamp, or was it Cardcaptor Sakura anime?
It was definitely the anime, the Cardcaptors anime.
Gotcha.
My first experience of Clamp. But I didn't put it together. It was like a whole thing until later.
Well, it's, and again, they're so different.
Clover is actually gorgeous.
It's all very good looking. Mm-hmm.
A lot of their stuff is like very ornate and very, you know, depending on the tone of the series, it's either like Holic, inky and gothic, or like in Chobits or Cardcaptor Sakura, very pastel and flowy. Clover has this very stark, like negative space, kind of very deliberate style where they're doing a lot of very interesting things. I feel like this is one of the things that makes Clamp so long-lived and so popular is they will adapt to the times. So I feel like this was around your Serial Experiments Lane and your like Elfen Lied kind of era. And Clover is very much this mysterious girl from a lab who's like taken out of her environment and has to like experience the world. But she has a dark, powerful secret that like she tries to contain, and she has fancy robot angel wings that come out every now and then.
I love that. 13-year-old me, I'm like, ooh, they got wings for no reason.
So initially, they were an 11-member collective of high school girls that started publishing doujinshi in 1984. Doujinshi, essentially Japan's version of zines or fan fiction, even manga that is self-published, a lot of times based off of some other original work. The three girls that got this ball rolling were Makona, Tsubaki Nekoi, and Satsuki Igarashi, who were all good friends at school. Then they met Nanase Okawa through a mutual friend. A mutual friend, they were like selling their work. A mutual friend picked it up, showed it to Okawa, who was like already really interested in just exploring it as a hobby and was really into storytelling. And that's how they all met up. Before they became known for shoujo manga, shoujo, by the way, that is the, is it teen girl or young girl manga? Shoujo.
I don't know the exact translation. I think it's young girl, because like shonen's young boy.
Yeah, so they become known for that, of course, especially with Cardcaptor Sakura and stuff. But their first works were based on shonen fare, such as Captain Tsubasa, Saint Seiya, also JoJo, right? JoJo was so, some of their early stuff?
From time immemorial, from like the weird Trek nerds that like immediately dialed in on the homosexual tension between Kirk and Spock in the 60s, to the X-Men weirdos that draw nothing but Gambit and Wolverine kissing on DeviantArt, to the legions of fans on AO3. As soon as a male creator just like makes something full of beautiful men and just gives them no personality, no relationships, and no like inner world, it is the female fans that swoop in and kind of put the pieces together and say, the author clearly wanted them to smooch each other. I'm just filling in that last mile.
Let me help you out.
Yeah. So stuff like Saint Seiya, which we'll never do an episode on, is this action show with these beautiful men in ornate armor. Like, it is gorgeous. Like, the beauty of the male form is on full display. And we've talked about how JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is full of homoerotic overtones from beginning to end. And one of their most popular early doujinshis was called JoJo's Bizarre Married Life, which detailed a relationship in which Jotaro Kujo and Kakyoin from part 3 of Stardust Crusaders have a full married life together. They have to navigate getting their marriage license. They have to, you know, because Kakyoin is so fastidious and he's the homemaker, and JoJo, he's too cool and just, you know, doesn't care. And how are they going to make it work?
The romance is in the details, you know? It's like, they don't just want to see them do it. It's like, what is their day-to-day like? Yeah. It makes it so much more real.
Within the JoJo community, this is a very big deal. In 1994, they released a second chapter of this doujinshi in which Kakyoin lays an egg and their son, Jota Kujo, emerges. And he has a little baby stand that's like half Star Platinum and half Hierophant Green.
Wow.
And he grows up. And so Jota Kujo is their like weird original character. And within the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure community, which has become its own meme juggernaut on the internet, that is how Clamp is connected with that lore.
That is so fucking funny. So they end up managing to self-publish by borrowing printing equipment from school under the grounds that they would also print out school materials. So already very savvy self-starters.
Just mimeograph. Graphing your kissy boy comics.
Totally.
I love it.
Also, this is a good time for me to request this. Fans, please stop sending me homemade drawings of me making love to the Hamburglar. All right? We get it. Okay? I bet I would have a good time with them on an evening rendezvous, but we don't need graphic, you know. I mean, my child lives here.
Everybody focuses on that one look you two exchanged in the third episode where they're like, ooh, there's something going on between them. But it's a platonic working relationship you have with the Hamburglar.
Ravel, ravel, baby.
Also, stop breaking the Grimace's heart.
Yeah, seriously, dude. Anyways, come on. They always draw him in the background looking on.
He's
very
so
upset.
Patient with this obsession you guys have, but inside, he's breaking. His heart is breaking, which I'm assuming is a chicken nugget.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a chicken nugget in the shape of a heart, you bastards. And those nuggets are overrated, by the way.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Don't give me any food opinions. Lord knows our audience gets upset when I get into food opinions. Essentially, this subgroup of friends worked with a few other groups, which is how they got to 11 members, and they wanted to pull everyone's work together for a book, and they gave it a title, and the title was Clamp. The name clamp is kind of odd because it's like a bunch of potatoes. Jake, it's weird.
It is a term in agriculture in which you are harvesting potatoes or any other underground, you know, a radish, a turnip, just any tuberous underground vegetable, and you store them in the field. Maybe you're not ready to like collect them all at once. You store them in a compact pile that is known as a clamp.
Huh.
And so the idea for this is compacted pile of potatoes is how they would refer to themselves. Yeah, I think it's like, kind of adorable.
They're just a bunch of potatoes. Yeah, yeah, all in a bunch. It just the idea is that it's just a gaggle of folks mm-hmm. making stuff together. And yeah, but it's surprising. The most surprising thing about the early history, 11 members to start. In 1987, they decided to switch gears and create original work, which amounted to RG Veda. They started working on this, at least. This was a loose adaptation of the Rig Veda, which is an ancient Indian collection of hymns based on Eastern mythology. It's, you know, it's very deep lore-filled
It's
Indian
a lot of sexy people
religion.
With long hair fighting each other in togas.
Right, exactly.
How I would describe RG Veda.
And while they're working on that, there's an editor at Wings Manga Magazine that caught wind of their work from that clamp book that they put out and asked them to submit something. So they submit a 60-page story as a sample. This was rejected for a few reasons. Nanase Okawa said everything was bad. First of all, we had never actually completed one story as a group of for, so we didn't know how to unite our ideas into one cohesive concept. Secondly, all of our skills, writing, construction, technique, etc., were still very green. So we were told that it was possible to put the work into Wings as it was. Even still, we were told that if we came up with a news story and submitted a rough draft that they liked, then they might consider publication. That's when we submitted Seiden. Seiden is just the Japanese name for RG Veda. The full name in Japan is Seiden Rigu Veda. Satsuki Igarashi said, it was originally a single story. We were told that if readers' responses were good, we could run three more volumes. Well, they were, so we did. The three stories we wrote were the first part of Seiden that we included in the first volume of the book. They told us again that if the demand was still there, we could write even more, and it was. So we were able to continue Seiden as a series. This was a very touch-and-go process with a constant threat of being dropped if the readers' responses ever became lackluster. So, I mean, it's literally the point where, like I said, none of these people went to school for this.
Yeah.
This was really a hobby that they ended up just like almost accidentally turning into a full-on career for themselves. Like they were looking for other jobs. They had other career aspirations, potentially like normal life career stuff. And they really just like kept following that success on this. And it just turned into this like huge boon for them. And so during this process, they moved to a two-bedroom apartment in Tokyo.
No, not a two-bedroom.
It was a one-bedroom?
I had to look this up.
I mean, it was nothing.
No,
it was
okay.
Like
so
Oliver
it was
Twist
a,
style.
It was
yeah.
a no-bedroom. Wow. It is a style of Japanese apartment.
Oh, it's like the old
known
one.
As a 2LDK, which stands for living room, dining room, kitchen. And basically, six of them just set up their desks in the living quarters and had to sleep under their desks, eat at their desks, share a single bathroom,
yeah.
and just spent all day. Oh, they didn't even have cell phones. They shared a single phone line.
Yeah,
six comic creators in Tokyo.
Man, Japan's something else. As Holden said at the top of the show, Magna Cairo is like, what if everything was as bad for me as possible? Let's just do it. Oh, I feel like shit and then die under mysterious circumstances. Exactly. Let's go.
And Inasa has said of the experience, I thought I was gonna die there. There was no privacy. The only space to get away from each other was under their desks. Mm-hmm. And while there, they are needing to like grow and learn and get better at this while they're putting out this manga that continues to get, you know, accepted into the magazine. And they're regularly attending Tokyo's Comiket, a semi-annual doujinshi convention. And this is their informal education space. This is where they're meeting other amateur mangaka, learning tricks of the trade, learning how about self-publishing, even things like that. And this is, you know, totally the craziest part of this whole thing to me is just that they like had no formal education, and then they also skipped the whole part where they work under a famous mangaka and learn all of the tricks of the trade and do this whole thing, which, you know, time and time again, whenever we do an episode like this, that's almost always the story. So it is incredibly impressive to me that as a collective, they were able to thrive and not just survive, but become like top of the heap in terms of groups and different mangaka out there putting stuff out. So let's get into the process. I'm excited to talk about the process. As they tell it, Nanase comes up with a story first. Then, according to her, we all get together to discuss the purpose of the story and its main characters. This part is likened by the ladies to sitting around a campfire telling stories. It's real loose and totally just word of mouth. Nanase said, when I was a kid on Health Sports Day, remember Health Sports Day? Katie and Jake, remember that day where we all had to do health sports?
I mean, we had the presidential fitness challenge. We were humiliated ritualistically in America as well.
Yeah, or
oh,
like...
Oh, can you jump, Jake? I want to see
like,
it.
Or like, what was that, like Color War?
Field Day we had. We had Field Day.
Field Day, yes.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Where I would just be like, I got asthma, so don't pick me. Like, leave me alone.
Well, my wife grew up in Florida. She had asthma. They made her run anyways. It traumatized her.
Oh, man.
Nanase said, when I was a kid on Health Sports Day, if it rained, a teacher would ask me to tell a story to the class. She also shares any location ideas or character designs that she has in her head at this time, sometimes offering up scribbles of the designs. She has a lot of very specific ideas of what the characters should look like in her head, that sort of thing. Makona said, at this phase, Nanase has decided characters' figures, hairstyles, and even clothes. Our job as designers is to see how close we can get our art to match her original version. Then, along with the completed outline, comes a final decision on the story setting, and for characters, they come to a consensus on each character's birthday and height. That is a specific choice they
make. Ladies love astrology!
That's totally what it is, right? That is so funny. And height. And
I'm surprised
love
we
height.
Didn't mention blood type.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, blood type, I'm surprised isn't in there. But, you know, you got to know.
And if a character is under 6'1", they are murdered before the story gets written. It's very upsetting. Satsuki said, once it's done, we create a character's profile sheet. With this chart, we won't get confused later. Because they, at a point, they deal with so many characters, it's a lot.
I watched an interview that's available on YouTube with all four of them, and they showed Sakura's character sheet, and it looks like a D&D profile.
Yeah.
And like they have a whole file of these characters, and I think it's part of what lets them bring characters back in different forms for stuff like Tsubasa Reservoir, which kind of just took all of their characters and kind of cast them in these new roles. It's kind of an interesting system. Almost the same way that fan fiction circles kind of keep up with their OCs and like can place their OCs in different scenarios.
I mean, it's interesting. It's like they accidentally created a show Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That's completely what it is. And once they've gotten to this point, they send a simple short story version of it and send it to their editor. If this is approved, Nanase then writes out the full story and, quote, whoever's in charge will draw a rough sketch. Nanase said, quote, whoever's in charge, because this is subject to change. Nanase said, sometimes different people do characters and backgrounds, but then on other occasions, one person may draw everything. Makona said, and sometimes it's a little of all of the above. It's like this character is done by so-and-so and this one by such-and-such. Makona said, an original comic story is quite like a script for a movie or anime. It even explains what's included in each frame. And this also can include notes on movement of the characters, the props they wield, and the emotional state of the characters as well. I think, again, that this really helps them make really dynamic work. Mm-hmm. That they constantly are switching their roles around and who approaches, you know, because they're all going to approach characters' backgrounds in totally different ways.
They
can
play to people's like strengths and weaknesses.
Totally.
Because I know like the traditional system, it's like one dude and a bunch of people below them, but the idea is to imitate that one dude. But yeah. In this, they're like admitting that each person does something differently.
And I love that they switch it up. It's why their work is so diverse, and I think that's the coolest thing they've got going. What were you going to say, Jake?
Oh, I saw again, there's like all these clips and just excerpts on YouTube, and one of them showed their work process, and it was Makona, I think it was for Holic. Makona just does the layouts of the pages and gets the character positioning down. Then it was Satsuki kind of comes in and fills in the ink lines, and then it was Nikoi who does like the very ornate kind of, I want to say fringe work and kind of the art.
All the sparkles.
Styles. Yeah. But the layouts too, that's, McKenna's awesome.
Those big wet tears.
Yes, yeah, totally. Just every, like the dress, all the clothes in that, you know, they lean so hard into the clothing on that one.
All the clothes. One of the things that made Cardcaptor Sakura so, you know, it didn't like break the mold that Sailor Moon laid out, you know, structurally. But just the fact that, like, she changed her costume almost every episode. Yeah. So, like, every time it was something unique and communicated something different about the character, and it made the animators have to redraw the entire transformation sequence every time.
There's a funny quote. It's like, it's just, we just thought it was sad that a girl would have to wear the same outfit every single time. We just thought that was, like, a bummer for the characters.
Yeah.
Which I thought was awesome. And also, I mean, but you can probably say, I mean, what is, I mean, Cardcaptor Sakura is only second to Sailor Moon when it comes to
at least in the West. It's like,
yeah,
that's number two.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
So yeah, as I mentioned before, they do not use assistants even at this point in their careers. They feel they wouldn't have as fast of an output with assistants because, as McKenna puts it, quote, they probably wouldn't be able to understand the 10 years worth of jargon we created among ourselves. But I also thought this was an interesting point to make about not using assistants. Igarashi said, I think when you're working on a project, there are certain things you can't say to assistants and editors and such, even though they're working on the project with you. However, because the four of us are a team, we all share in both the good times and the bad. So they can just be blunt and honest with each other and not have to worry about like politeness and pleasantries when it comes to getting the work done, I think is what that means, essentially. And they're all like workhorses. I mean, their day starts at like 10 a.m. and ends at like 1 in the morning. Oof. One person did a rundown of how, like, on Monday morning, Okawa comes in early and writes the script, and then they come in and just immediately get to work, and it's just, yeah, it's just that it goes. And then I think every, like, 2 or 3 weeks, they get one day off and go have fun. Yeah. That's their life.
Well, you know, they got hobbies. Like Okawa is a big fan of films. McKenna loves
different hobbies.
Fiber arts. She can sew her own kimonos. I believe it was Satsuki said that she's a gamer. And in the interview I watched, she said she was really caught up in Shin Megami Tensei 2.
Yeah.
She was playing a lot of Shin Megami Tensei 2.
Hell yeah, dog. That's like it rules.
That kind of makes sense.
Yes. They've also designed the cover page for almost all of their works. I love this quote. I love cohesiveness like this. Nanase said, we believe everything in a comic from front to back cover is important to the story, so we want total coordination. And I love that attention to like the whole thing. It was kind of back when I was doing shows and I was like teaching people like about how to like put on like a sketch comedy show or whatever. Was like, hey, the second they enter the theater, they're in your show. Like, this is your experience you're giving them. So, like, you want to set the scene from the beginning. We don't fuck around when it comes to the music that's playing, the vibe in the room, whatever, right? And I think that quote, like, really speaks towards that, like, full control of the product. I love that about this group. So, let's get into the 90s where all the shit starts popping
let's
off,
go.
All right? Because, like, RG Veda was, that was running starting in 1990. Clamp started then putting out another manga, and this was their big breakthrough, called Tokyo Babylon. You know, the way they talk about RG Veda definitely is like, well, it was our first thing. You know what I mean? It was definitely like not the thing that they love that's even out there. You know what I mean? Because they're just like, it's like your first, like, it's like going and having your first open mic be published and widely read. You know what I mean? And, but really,
I mean, they were literal teenagers. It's kind of crazy to think
about.
Yeah.
totally crazy. And so Tokyo Babylon is what really puts them on the map. It was also their first original work. Wasn't adapted from any source material. There's no Joestars in it banging other Joestars. It centers around twins named Subaru and Hokuto, who protect Tokyo from supernatural evils while living with an older man named Seishiro. Hubba Hubba. Immediately, we have a reoccurring theme in Clamp's work, exploring individuality, as well as an element that often recurs, and that is that characters that are twins, which Hollick's got that immediately. So much of their work has twins in it. I'm not sure why. Do we have
they
any,
love
like...
Budweiser. Wee, twins!
It's Destiny.
Yes.
Destiny plays a huge part in Clamp's greater oeuvre.
Yes.
I also think there's something like kind of magical and like unknown about twins, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's also because they're so tight-knit group and there's this thing about like an unspoken bond that is bigger than time itself. You know what I mean?
And we just talked about how they can't have assistance because they don't speak their language that they've created over 10 years. That totally makes sense. Absolutely. And then Okawa is obsessed with Destiny, but especially obsessed with the fact that like, the way that you can change your destiny. And she's very, and I think again, that has to do with their story. They all were so close to living quote unquote, like normal lives, regular, you know, and then they just went and just went for it, you know, and ended up achieving great success. And they follow, again, they just like followed that success and also that fear and like really took that leap, like moving to Tokyo and living that shitty apartment must have been fucking crazy for them, you know, as it is for so many of us who make that choice to like leave the family structure, leave the normal thing and like go live in somewhere like New York City
and sleep under your desk in an overcrowded city.
Bro,
with
my
five
first
weirdos.
New York apartment, you're giving me flashbacks. Honestly, that place was in a horrible part of Bed-Stuy. I mean, it was small as shit. It was, you know,
the smell.
I was afraid, like it was scary just to go to the bodega at night to get like a 40 of Budweiser, which is all I could afford to like to have some drinks before bed. Like, because I was like, I might get jumped, you know what I mean? So like, yeah, it was, it's wild to do that. And also so respect, I have so much respect for that and like love that they have this story.
I love how it's like almost like a punk house, but it's just these like women who want to draw beautiful
art. Yeah, just
art.
These dirty girls that are like, they're not even women at that, but you know what I mean? They're just like so young, just drawing horny, you know, dude lovers. Yeah. Speaking of which, the relationship between Seishiro and Subaru, at least in the West, it was one of the first honest approaches to a portrayal of a gay relationship in something like this. And so that was like a huge deal, having it just be, you know, this like not, you know, I, especially not being like it being like a gimmick, you know, but really just being a part of the story. That was definitely like really cool. The series is also notable for both being enjoyed by a female and male audience, as it had a decent mix of shoujo and shonen manga elements. And Okawa said, it really reflects how young we were. This is what she says about the series. There's a lot of our works that if we were to do now, we'd do them differently. But that's not the case of Babylon. The way we made it is a reflection of its time, I guess. It's a series we made because it was the 1980s. And even though it's, I think it started coming out in 1990, like they really look at it as
it's basically
the 80s for sure. Have you guys read it?
I've never read it.
I've
seen it on a shelf, you know, during the search where you had to find like any sort of anime or manga artifact by like digging through a dungeon crawl.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be really cool academically to read almost in a way to like get a that taste of like 80s style and, you know, especially the culmination of 80s style and also to see the first thing that really put them out there. Though I think the thing I'm most excited about from this time period is X.
Woo!
Yes, let's get into talk it. About it.
X is crazy.
Yeah, give me. I've X got a taste for my nuts. Research, right. But like, give me the.
I think, Katie, you mentioned this. Having heard you watch the movie recently, I went back and watched the movie recently, and holy shit!
I mean, what I love about X is, you know, the thing about the time period when I first experienced a lot of this stuff is like, it's very desperate and like unattached from each other, because like I'm watching and reading things completely out of context. You know, I'm reading like volume 13 of something, or like episodes 3 and 4 of a, like 100 episode series. Uh-huh. So, but the funny thing about X is that's always the experience of it. It just never quite totally makes sense, but in the best way possible. And the basic plot is there's like, you know, a demon's gonna come and take over everything. So these
the dragons of heaven.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Want to cleanse the world?
Yes.
Or is it the dragons of Earth? I forget which dragons are.
There's one in heaven and one on Earth, and if the two twain meet, then shit gets real. And then there's like pick your fighter. It's a fighting game. Oh, I'm the guy with this power, and like I'm a girl with a dog who fights for me, and I'm a sexy lady prostitute. And then also they fight inside of domes that they summon from the sky, mm-hmm. that puts you in an alternative dimension.
Okay, all right, so this is something that Okawa had like in her back pocket forever, this sweeping epic narrative about the end of the world and humanity's role in the universe, and like these fated enemies and lovers like torn asunder. There is a prostitute warrior,
yeah.
And she has this like enlightened attitude about sex work. And there's like a salaryman guy,
yes.
who's like, listen, I know humanity's fucked, but I got a family and I love my family. I want to give I'd rather have them in a doomed, shitty world than nothing.
Yeah.
And so there's like all these philosophy things going on.
A lot of like red string, like, I don't want to fight this fight, but you must.
Oh, it's Kamui is our main character, beautiful pointy boy.
Yes.
And his best friend, Fuma, a different, slightly taller pointy boy. And they are clashing against destiny. The movie was animated by Madhouse.
Yeah.
Incredible animation. And the series wasn't finished yet. So the director actually went to Okawa and was like, so like kind of what can I get done in like 90 minutes or so? And she's like, well, you could do this and this and this. And they make it together. The animation is gorgeous. It is horrifically violent. There's nudity.
Oh, yeah.
They introduce a million characters at once. It's like female gaze ninja scroll in a lot of ways.
It is exactly female gaze ninja scroll. And I'm like a dum-dum, so like any movie or like OVA from this time period, I will watch because it always looks gorgeous. It never makes a lick of sense, but this one's really fun.
Oh, no. As soon as within the first 10 seconds of the movie, our main character's mother appears before him, strips naked,
yes.
and rips a giant sword out of her yes. womb and hands it to him, I'm like, I understand what is happening.
Yeah. And this is a great example of what I'm talking about, that clamp style man, where their crotch starts where your like clavicle should be. It's all legs.
Yeah. They call, I believe they also call it the noodle style.
Yeah.
So I said that word before. Yeah. It's
also
the
big hands. Those
yes.
classic, this is a very dated term, but them yaoi hands yeah. are very all over the place.
What can they do? Yeah. I mean, what could they possibly do with those giant hands? I mean, good Lord.
Gently yet powerfully caress each other's faces.
Yes.
Rabble, rabble indeed. Okawa has been conceptualizing an end of the world epic since middle school. This was the result. Its themes center around humanity's responsibilities to itself, family, and the planet. And this is also the first work where they start doing the thing I think is also I think is the other really cool thing that they do. They start introducing a shared universe. There are characters from Tokyo Babylon. There's also characters from another work we didn't mention, Clamp School Detectives. And it's a very important event for the team, as the idea of a shared universe of characters for the work of Clamp is one of the coolest things about their work, sets them apart from many other artists, especially since the range and genre of their different projects is astounding in its own right. So very cool thing. Also, another recurring element of Clamp happens with this manga in that it is still not finished.
Yep.
In this instance, it was actually due to the dark nature of the events of the story. There were real life events mirroring it, like earthquakes in Japan, 9/11,
yeah.
stuff like that, they just got icky. And now
near
I feel like
pornographic depictions of the city of Tokyo being just destroyed in horrific violence.
It's interesting, though, because that's so much. that's like so much of manga and animation.
Yeah.
You know.
In general.
So I it's interesting that they're the ones that got really screwed from it.
No, Dragon Ball, they're like, hey, let's go to this empty field that's easy to draw and we won't hurt as many people.
Yeah. In the 80s, though, there was a lot of stuff like, you know, anything that's like Demon City Shinjinko. Mm. They're just like, what if we just dropped another bomb on our traumatized yeah, country? Yeah, so they, but it's a demon one.
Yeah, it's like, funny. Usually they just lean into it. I mean, Godzilla came from, you know, the
Akira. Yeah.
It's, atomic bombs.
Now that we're talking about it, Tokyo gets fucked, man.
But that is my experience of Clamp 2 is like, nothing's finished and it's like maddening. It's like almost like a curse.
Yeah, people definitely feel that way. I had somebody in chat bring up the ending issue. I will say it's less than you would think considering how much stuff they've done.
Totally.
On a chart on Wikipedia, I believe it's 5 different works. I'll get into that, the specific ones later. Clover's one of them. This is one of them. But it's like 5 different ones that are fully just went on hiatus and never returned. A lot of stuff has been completed to varying degrees of success. But yeah, it's still, I don't know, man. I haven't even read X and I'm mad that it's not finished. Especially if it's an apocalyptic.
Just
thing.
Watch the movie. Yeah. Watch the movie, dude. You will not get California goofy.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is definitely a California goofy experience.
I gotta love
California. You just let it wash over you.
Right,
don't
right.
ask.
Don't just, ask questions. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That is the way I like to enjoy things in general, honestly, is like I want it to not make sense.
Another series I desperately want mentioned on this show is Magic Knight Rayearth.
Yes.
Which is another one of their 90s hits, which involved three color-coded 8th grade girls transported to a magical land of fantasy. Basically, isekai before isekai. Where they have to rescue this enchanted kingdom. One has a cool sword. One has a bow and arrow. One has a kind of French pokey sword. I forget what they're called. The more elegant
yeah.
sword.
A French pokey. Yeah, you had it right.
Rapier.
Yes. They get giant mechas. They fight monsters. They worry about who they have crushes on, including each other, question mark? It's a fantastic series and really... just mushes a bunch of genres together in a very unique way that really, you know, not until the big isekai boom was it like so just all the pieces in place. And it's been around forever. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. It's very fun. Lots of really good 90s-ass anime action.
Yeah, and while that has its foot halfway through the door of Magical Girl, this is when we can get into it. They go full Magical Girl with probably their most notable work, Cardcaptor Sakura.
Let's go.
Shoujo magazine Nakayoshi wanted another series from them after their successful run of Magical Knight Rayearth, so they decided to set their sights on the pure Magical Girl story, largely for the challenge. Because they've just been doing so much dark stuff, or even in Magic Knight Rayearth, I was going to call it Magical Girl Rayearth, even in Magic Knight Rayearth, they have these, like, we watched, like, one episode of it on our study session, patreon.com/whizbrew. You can join us for our study session, $50 a month on Discord. Oh, it's a good time! And we watched an episode of that, and there were, like, giant hell beasts and stuff, but just these, like, little cutesy girls, and it was a fun mix, but you still had that element of that stuff, so... They were like, we don't have a big background in Magical Girl, and a lot of their endings too, and just plot points and a lot of their other stuff was very tragic, more on the dark side of things. They're killing off characters that make people sad, things like that. They're like, what if we just did something warm and like just had something that was on the cute end of things? And so they decided to put out Cardcaptor. And so, yeah, I'm sure, Katie, you could probably talk more towards this, but like, I think because of that fact, they ended up creating something more successful in the Magical Girl genre because they had this completely different background,
it's really interesting now thinking about it in the context of what they're making before, because it totally makes sense. So the main plot point basically is this little girl, like she's like in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Finds a cult book in her dad's house, mm-hmm. a house that she's running by herself, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's cleaning, because no one does anything, even though she's like 11. And it releases these monsters that she has to like capture, like these tarot deck type cards. But the designs of the cloud card monsters are a lot more sophisticated than I would normally associate with something that is like essentially a little kid show.
Uh-huh.
And I think that really stood out. And also that, yeah, it's just like, it's very lighthearted and fun, but there is definitely this like weird sadness of like, why is she by herself all the time? Like, she's like in love with an older man who doesn't know she's alive, and like her best friend who's like doing world star on her. Like, it's just
so,
like,
I have a quote from Okawa that says, she wanted a story with a protagonist who had an open mind towards different family structures, different kinds of love, and different perspectives from society. Because I'll get into it in a second, what Nelvana and Kids WB did to this series, but most of the series isn't really all about like capturing these magical monsters. It really is about her crushes, her friends, her family, and all this stuff.
It's almost like they gave her kind of like a Peter Parker thing where it's like she has to go out at night and save her loved ones, and then she has to deal with that like nobody knows about it. And that's like the larger plot point, is that nobody knows about it.
And there are tons of untraditional relationships throughout this series. Katie, you mentioned that she has a crush on her brother's friend Yukito, who is this beautiful silver-haired, lithe man. Shaoran, I can't pronounce the name, but the boy, the sword boy, if you remember from the original Kids WB thing, in the original manga and anime, also has a crush on Yukito. And it is their shared tragic love that they cannot be with this older boy is what first bonds them together and makes them a fated couple by the end of the series.
Yeah.
Which is insane. The world star friend who makes all of her outfits and constantly films her with a camera just flat out says, like, I am in love with Sakura, but I know our feelings will never be reciprocated.
Yeah, there's like a whole speech where it's like, why do you make all her stuff? And she's like, because I'm in love with her, and this is like the only way I can show my love for her in a normal way or whatever. Like,
by the end of the series, Yukito, the high school boy everybody wants a piece of, reveals that he's in love with Sakura's brother the entire time. And they become a fated couple that reappear later in the metaverse of Clamp Stuff. And there's even weird stuff.
That was weird stuff.
For example, Sakura's mom is dead.
Yes.
And it is revealed that she fell in love with her father when she was 16 and he was her teacher.
Yeah.
And that is just straight up there.
Some traditional anime bullshit. I'm not saying it's good.
There is another plot line in which Sakura's friend Reika, I believe, falls in love with her teacher. And he says that I feel the same way, and I can only promise to marry you later when you are of age. And that is also makes them a fated couple who appear together later. All of this stuff completely obliterated when they brought it to America for Kids WB.
They're like, what, is this girl's Pokemon? Let's get on that.
They literally cut out like half the episodes, changed the order, changed every single, even remotely queer relation, and they put Shaoran to be the deuteragonist of the series, even though Sakura is the main character unabashedly in the original. All the promo material is like, that's right, it's Shaoran and Sakura together, like fighting monsters, doing cool boy action. Literally, in America, they brought it in as card captors, left Sakura out of it. And they changed the theme song to that rollicking Pokemon-ass thing that I played earlier, as opposed to the incredible song, Catch You, Catch Me,
all-time
by
banger.
Megumi Hinata. April, if you can just play a little bit of this delightful, jaunty bop.
I mean, this era of theme song, let me tell you something.
yeah, it's awesome.
Gets me hype.
But it's these themes of like alternative, I don't want to say alternative lifestyles, but at the time, that's what they would have called them.
Yeah. Right.
You know, this deeper emotional core.
Weirdo love. yeah, totally.
All this attention to freaks.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's very interesting seeing like Western networks try to deal with it. I mean, like the famous one is in Sailor Moon, where they made a Sailor Uranus. They're just like, that's a boy.
And they're cousins. If anyone asks, they're cousins. Different. There was different. I'm sorry. There was a different.
We definitely covered that in our Sailor Moon episode way back when. For sure.
He races cars. There's nothing trans or gay here, ladies.
Well, speaking of weird love, shall we get into the work of the 2000s from Clamp starting?
We got it. All right.
Let's go.
Persicoms. Let's talk about
it. There's no bits like Joe bits like robot lady. I know.
Find a naked teenager in the alley. Drag her back into your weirdo home. Turns out that she cannot speak some English. Oh no, I guess we'll have some wacky adventures.
All right, now Jake, please try not to achieve an erection during this part. I know that this
never. Even in the 2000s, even at my college anime club, whenever the sweatiest weirdo in the back was like, what if we watched show bits? Like the whole room was like, no, that's a bad Hubert. Hubert, go back to the engineering department.
We mentioned it before, but Chobits is a romantic comedy about a college student who finds an abandoned personal computer shaped like a lady. Not a robot lady, a personal computer in the shape of a lady.
I would say girl. Okay, I would say shaped like a girl.
I just know you turn her on by pushing a button that's right up by the vagina in between the thighs. I remember
up
that part.
By the vagina or inside of it?
Oh, was it in it?
It was in it.
We briefly... It is implied that it's inside.
Oh, okay.
That
I can't remember. We very briefly viewed a couple of panels during the Sunday study session, but we were worried about, getting involvement from the FBI, so we quickly shut it down. I mean, what can you say, though? I don't know. Is this just horny in a bad way? Or, I mean, I think it's kind of cool. These fun ladies are I feel like if it was done by a guy.
I'm obsessed with it. Okay. Because it's so nuts in the sense of like, so it's not just that. Okay, so the world that they build is that they're computers that are people, mainly women, and they come in different sizes and models, and like there wasn't this, the laws of this weren't totally thought out, because as you consume it, you're like, wait, but do they have social security numbers if they can have a job? Like, how does this work? Anyway, so this college student moves, he can't afford a computer. He's from the sticks, so he's never seen one. He finds her in the trash, so he's like, good, I can have a computer now. When he finally figures out how to turn her on, she cannot speak. And she's supposed to be a dream girl that he's essentially raising, because he's like, she doesn't have the right software, so he has to teach her how to be alive. And that's like a major plot point. That's insane to me, because they can't figure out the rules of it. Anyway, so when I was in high school, right, like how in like early, late middle school, how I found out about most anime and manga was like seeing ads for it in publications like Gamers Republic, where it'd be like a big ad for it. So when I first found out about, oh, and she kind of has like cat ears where the cord to plug into the TV, like, so I knew what it was. And I remember I had this friend from another school who had a Zanga where he reviewed anime. And he said on it, in a lot of ways, Chi is the perfect woman. And I'm like, I'm like 14, 15 reading this. And I'm like, a nonverbal, passive, dumb baby is the perfect woman. And that was like the moment I was like, oh my God, anime's a problem. I was like, holy shit. Like,
it was like a trigonometry equation E=MC², and then just a pair of panties is flying by your brain.
It's so burned in my memory of me being like, because I didn't really know what feminism was yet. I didn't have that all worked out. I was like, I'm not like other girls. I listen to nu metal.
Exactly.
And it was like this, like Chobits broke my brain. And then I went back and watched it as an adult. It's a horrible show in the best way. I do suggest it. It's a nightmare. The rules are crazy.
My favorite thing about the anime is like they're talking about how these the Persicoms, these robot characters, and especially Chi, the main character is like the most advanced technology. What, something so insanely cutting edge, it could break the balance of power in the world. And there is like levels of intrigue that it gets into, mm-hmm. where like people are trying to like kidnap her or shut her down because she could like destroy all the networks in the world. But anytime she does any computer stuff, the sound effects in the anime is just like the clicky whir of like old hard drives. It's like no computer sounds like them anymore.
And like she's essentially like a Palm Pilot.
Like an IBM Aptiva.
You have to like plug her into a tube television to like send like, you know, SMS messages. It's fucking crazy. And then there's all these other women that are like throwing themselves at this like essentially useless man. So it's very interesting that it was created by women, because I'm like, right. What's up? Are you okay?
Yeah, the harem. How does the female gaze like work for the most wish fulfilling harem ass anime?
I guess what it comes down to is that the plot is like all these men are in love with these women they can't have because they're robots. It's like a thing that comes up over and over again in the show. There's like multiple characters suffering because of that. So I guess it's like a long game punishment.
Okawa said, I love stories about marriages between different kinds of beings, but in Japan, many of those tend to end unhappily, and I hate that. So I guess they tried to like explore what it would be like if a relationship actually worked out and, you know, the ins and outs of that. I don't know. It's Chobits. It's a weird part of their story. After that comes where we're getting now into my territory a little bit more of what I've really enjoyed for their stuff. Are we done with Chobits?
Oh, yeah.
Are you okay, Jake? I see you're sweating. I see droplets of perspiration.
First of all, if I'm thinking about Chobits, it's a giant sweat droplet, and it is moving perfectly vertically down. This floating in front of my head, and it's floating downwards.
Then came the super fun gothy Holic, which is about a high school student who can see the supernatural and ends up getting a job working for a powerful witch who owns a wish granting shop in order to try and get rid of his ability. And the super cool thing about it is that it has this cool crossover situation with another manga run titled Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicles. A little brief thing about Holic too. XXX is like essentially a blank in Japan, so it's like blankaholic, like alcoholic or workaholic, and it's exploring different people's addictions, and it's getting into all that, and it's pretty fun, and she's like helping them get through their addictions, but she's like a lot, and it's like got the creepy vibe and the like.
I think it's kind of underrated, honestly.
Yeah, I'm loving
like
it.
A lot of like weebs know about it, but it doesn't have that like mass appeal some of this stuff has.
More goths need to know about it.
Truly.
That's how I feel.
It kind of just blurred into that kind of 2000s era slightly gothy Black Butler, like just mush in my head. Reading it, like you said, Holden,
it's great.
The way that it's like, at least, who knows, you're probably not very far in it.
I didn't get very far in it.
Most mangas lose the train like within a year of their initial publishing. But the way that, at least in this early stage, it is about, like, what does it mean to want to change your behavior? Like, who do you change your behavior for? Is there, if it's something you do compulsively, like, can you just decide to stop? Or, you know, does it require outside intervention? There's, like, a lot of really deep stuff. And then, out of nowhere, fucking Shaoran and Sakura from Cardcaptor Sakura literally fall out of the sky and plop in the middle of the proceedings.
It's awesome.
Because like you said, it's a crossover.
So yeah, they wanted to do this insane thing. I think it's so impressive. So Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle is based in fantasy. It revolves around a witch from Holic, the one of the major characters, Yuko Ichihara, working with a princess and her archaeologist friend to find and retrieve the princess's memories, which are scattered between several worlds. So that's how they directly tie the two together. But then also in this very multiverse structural style, they pull in characters from a bunch of previous works, including Cardcaptors, Sakura. Tsubasa was their first foray into a full-on shonen manga You could say Angelic Lair, but that was a little bit more of a genre mix.
Yeah.
And they released it in Weekly Shonen Jump. This meant that they needed to adapt their style a bit to the genre by drawing with thicker lines and simpler layouts.
Yeah, they
and
gotta dumb that shit down for the dumb dumbs.
Yeah, they gotta dumb it up for the dumb idiot boys. And yeah, they also even said it was actually more difficult than they even imagined it would be doing this crazy thing where they were putting out two manga at the same time. They were both interconnected, but they definitely made it a point that like you could read Holic without reading Tsubasa and still enjoy it, but you get a lot more out of enjoying all of it at once, and even more if you're familiar with their previous work.
Because it's like a Western comics approach, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. It's an event,
or,
right? Yeah.
Like, it's, Asama Tezuka, Astro Boy guy, also used a kind of like star system where characters from previous series would just appear in other series, maybe with a different background, maybe with a different name, but like they would still be the same character archetype.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, you know, the characters from Chobits would show up. The characters from Cardcaptor Sakura would show up, and they were still a couple that like these faded loves would maintain throughout the universe was like a huge deal.
Yeah. Again, destiny, fate, all that good stuff in the themes. Also, because there's more action in Tsubasa, and it took more pages to tell the story because they'd have all these action pages. At times they'd have to literally like stop on Holic and let Tsubasa catch up so that they would both be coming out in the timeline they wanted them. Like that's how tied together they were, which I think is so crazy and so impressive. Holic runs until 2011, Tsubasa until late 2009. And I think it's just like, what? It's so cool. They became known for all this other stuff in the 90s. And then in the 2000s, they're like, all right, let's just really go for some crazy shit. I mean, I feel like they're constantly challenging themselves, which is keeping their output fresh.
One more thing from the 2000s, so people don't yell at us for neglecting to mention it.
Sure.
Adding to their just like hit parade, they did the character design for Code Geass, Lelouch, Mask Boy.
Code Geass.
Oh man, that's I love right. it. That was was that an anime or video game?
I mean, it had a lot of different adaptations.
Well, initially it was all.
Yeah, it was all.
But initially it was anime that they provided the character designs for. I believe that was the first time they provided art and design specifically to an anime without it being like adapted from their original work. And was like,
it's kind of crazy people didn't ask them to do that sooner.
I know.
Like, character design is such a strong clamp.
Totally, totally. And all of it, yeah, costumes and all of it. Like, it's so visually impressive, too. And to see that stuff in motion is even more exciting. So for their 15th anniversary in 2004, they put out like a big book about that had all this kind of insider info and how they work and like all the stuff they've done in the past. They also changed their names. Nanase Okawa became Ageha Okawa. Makona Apapa became simply Makona. Mick Nekoi became Tsubaki Nekoi. And Satsuki Igarashi stayed that name, but it's written with different characters. And it was kind of for funsies, but also Mick did and enjoy getting confused for Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones, and Makona felt her surname sounded immature for some reason, so just like chopped it off. But anyways, that's just a weird thing they did. They're just having a good time. 2006. Also,
I kind of like how unhinged they are.
I know, like, they're crazy.
We're like, we've had massive success. Better change what we're known as.
I mean, they've kept up this level of work this entire time. Like, they never, I don't think any of them married. I don't think any of them started families. Like, their work is their life. So why not go balls to the wall and just do it?
100%. Artists true and true. And in the 2010s, they also introduced a new Holic manga titled Holic Ray. It's like a sequel manga. And Cardcaptor Sakura Clear Card, which people are pretty hot on. That's a sequel manga as well. It follows Sakura in junior high school.
Yeah, look at her finally getting to age slightly.
There was supposed to be a new version of Tokyo Babylon in anime form titled Tokyo Babylon 2021, which was to release release in said year in 2021, but the production group handling it, Go Hands, ended up involved in a plagiarism incident in regards to the costume design, with one being an exact copy of a famous dress worn by a member of the K-pop group Red Velvet.
Oh.
And I guess you'd get sued for that. So this project is now in the works with a new
K-pop
studio.
K-pop industry is
the stands, man.
Lord.
Also, the Rev Loves. The Rev Loves will, like, end you if you cross them.
Because it's like, JoJo's whole thing is like, this is literally Prince. But K-pop's like, no.
And I think the cool thing, I think the newest thing is pretty sweet. I think people are pretty psyched. The Clamp is has now signed on with Netflix to produce an original anime series based on Grimm's fairy tales. It will be a modern twist on the stories, but with elements of horror and suspense. I'm pretty down with
y'all
that.
Y'all
watch the shit out of that.
Put that trash right in my mouth.
It's going to be great. I'm definitely going to watch it. And I think I'm going to keep reading Holic. I'm going to keep probably getting the omnibuses. There's seven of them, and I think they're like $20 a pop, or you can do what Jake does and steal them from the internet, Jake. It's unbelievable what's happening with you these days.
Listen, I would download a car. I would.
I would do. I would so super download a car.
I mean, the people publishing them, they're not like mom and pop shops.
Right.
They're not like taking like food out of the mouth of Clamp.
So a couple more things to clean up on them. The unfinished manga, they're definitely known for that. There are five series which have unfortunately been put on hiatus. The oldest, of course, is X, which debuted in 1992. It hasn't been updated since 2003. After that comes Clover, which is actually the longest without an update. It actually stopped before X in 1999. Then there's Gate 7 and Drug and Drop, also titled Legal Drug, which both started in 2011 and stopped in 2013, haven't been finished. And lastly, Holic Ray is not concluded. At least Holic is concluded. But Holic Ray has not concluded, and it hasn't been updated since 2017.
In Clamp's defense, like, it's really common for a manga to start and not get finished. I mean, it's a prolific genre. It's just not going to happen sometimes.
I really hope they finish X.
That would be an event.
Yeah, everyone would freak out if they did that. I really hope they do that. Is all this other stuff, maybe Clover, of course, people would probably freak out about, but like everything else is like, sure, but fucking if they went and finished their third manga they ever started put out, and like from, and it's so rooted in the 90s.
Well, and I think I would love that. The death of Mura has like sent this like shockwave where everyone sees the sword of Damocles over their head. I'm looking at you, One Piece. Like, you know, people are like, we gotta laugh.
I was devastated by that shit, man. That's the only manga I have all of like on the shelf. Like,
I have a literal Berserk tattoo, dog.
Oh, hell
like people
are
leaving me flowers at my house and like calling me.
Yeah, dude. It's such a bummer. Man. Yeah, I was just like, damn. Anyways, we've talked about the manga adaptation or anime adaptations rather. They've worked with just like how they put out manga in every different weekly manga mag you could think of. They've also worked with like every major studio, it seems. It seems like they put a lot of their stuff out mostly on Production IG and through Madhouse. Those seem to be their major companies they work
through. Which honestly, they put out such good work, and I think that's like a really good analog
totally.
For, you know, Clamp, because Clamp is so like high quality that, you know, they can't
totally.
Be they can't be doing all that PS2 cutscene bullshit.
Is there like a recommended anime that's probably like some of their best adaptation stuff? Like, where should people look for that?
It's I mean, I'm gonna be real, it's like all over the place.
Yeah.
It's all good looking.
Uh-huh.
Some episodes of Holic really off model and weird.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's all a little funky, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
there's nothing that I'm gonna say is like a perfect thing. I think if you want something bite-sized to watch, X-99, just because it's a fun movie, like we've covered, it doesn't make sense, but you're gonna love the way you look.
Be so high. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I love it.
And I mean, you know, if you get the COVID or something and you can't leave your house, watch Card Captors, why not? The Japanese version, you know. It's fun.
They're sacred for working together for decades. Mostly it is the ability to differentiate their relationship during work and play. Igarashi said, "We are professionals while we are working, and we are friends when we hang out together. We change our mindset depending on the situation." I think that's some really cool self-control. I have a final quote from Okawa, some advice to people trying to get into the manga game, but also, you know, for young artists in general. Jake, Katie, any final things you want to say about Clamp before we GTFO?
Mm-hmm. Nah, I'm all right.
Jake. I mean, I think we covered it, but I just think they're way more influential than people give them credit for.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah. I think aesthetically, you still see the waves of it around today, and there's so much happening right now that just like straight up wouldn't exist.
Yeah, my advice, especially for like, I think a lot of dude bros out there that are interested in this kind of stuff, like give them a shot. I was really like into the stuff that I read, you know what I mean? And if you're like really, really horny and you just need relief, Chobits, I guess.
But
I don't know.
It's not even horny though.
I'm just kidding.
The weird
thing about Chobits is
it's not horny in the way you would think. It's like, I'm right, like, ooh, I'm so horny to take care of someone.
Mm. You know, I think we are more evolved these days because like now I'm like getting more into magical girl stuff. I mean, my favorite anime besides Neon Genesis is Puella Magica, Madoka Magica. But still, if you're the kind of person who's like, oh, I don't do magical girl and that's what they're known for, it's like, no, you're totally missing out. Like, definitely check out X, Holly.
Magic Knight Ray Earth, I swear.
Magic Knight Ray Earth. Yeah. It's great shit. And so, and Cardcaptor. Like, it's really good stuff. All right, here's my quote to close it out. Okawa said, "If you have something you want to draw and can finish it without giving up, you will debut for sure." This is advice for people getting into the industry. "Do the work till the end. No matter how poor you think it is, there will be some people attached to it. If it's a comic, finish one story. If it's a novel, also finish one story. The most important thing is to give your idea a concrete form." There you go, our episode on Clamp. Thank you so much for joining us. If you'd like to follow us further, patreon.com/whizbrew. $5 a month, you get weekly bonus content and ad-free episodes. $15 a month, I already talked about the Sunday study session. patreon.com/whizbrew. Before I plug anything else, Katie, please take it away.
Oh, hi. I'm Katie Rose. You can follow me on Twitter at Katie Rose. I'm sorry. I don't know where social media is anymore. please listen to Ballin' Out Super if you like anime. We talk about Dragon Ball and have mental breakdowns. That's Ballin' Out Super, your place for Dragon Ball Z. I'm starting a couple new projects, so do follow me on social media. My free one, I don't know when it's coming out, so I don't want to talk about it just yet, but follow me out. But if you like music, I'm starting a personal project where I start a Patreon where I send you twice a month basically a personalized mixtape. Radio show.
Cool.
Because I love to share music with people, but you know, the algorithms at large will not let me make it. So I've started KRL Stupid Music Cavalcade. If you go to patreon.com/stupidmusic, please, it's only $5 a month. I will send you a hour and a half to 2 hour show, full track listings. There'll be themes you can vote on for shows. Eventually, I'll have a Discord, so check it out. The first one's going out at the end of the month, so that's going to be March 31st, but you got plenty of time to get on board. Let's go!
Hell yeah. Twitch.tv/Holdenatorsho, you've heard it a million times. Twitch.tv/Holdenatorsho, Monday through Friday streams. Jake?
I'm on Twitch. I'm on YouTube. Go look for Puppet Jared. That's my VTuber avatar. The flagship stream is the Thursday Cartoon Dumpster. Folks, I've been begging you to check out this stream for months, and you've listened. You've listened every week. People come in and said, "Hey, I'm from Whizbrew. I'm watching this. It's fucking rad. You rule. I'm having a blast." We watch weird old cartoons from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Things that are so odd, so bizarre, so mind-numbingly just brain-breakingly weird that the very idea that human beings made it could send you into an existential death spiral. And I promise it's funny. I promise it's funny. Go to twitch.tv/puppetjared.
And hey, never stop bruising.
And keep on whizzing.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.